You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Claudia Tsaiska. Claudia, thanks so much for being with me today.
Good evening.
Claudia, where are we talking to you from? Where are you now?
I'm based in a very small town called Huntly. It's in the north of Scotland. Who is listening here, but it's about 4 hours north of Edinburgh. That's where I live.
Tell me a little bit about Deveron Arts. I'm fascinated by what you're doing and the projects that have happened there, but if you could explain your position there and a little bit about the mission of Deveron Arts or perhaps its founding as a way to explain what exactly it does.
Yeah. Okay, well, Deveron Arts is based, as I said, it's based here in Huntly, and it's a quite small town with 4,000 inhabitants. And we quite deliberately don't have a venue, but we call it the town is the venue. So we invite artists from all over the world, but basically the context provides the venue. And so unlike other art organizations, the venue is not the starting point for us, but the town is the starting point. The town is the venue. The town is also the starting point. So any issues or topics of community concern here are the starting points for our work. And there we invite artists to come here to work here for a while. Normally they work about 3 months at a time. They come from all over. They can come from Scotland or from Europe. But we had also artists from Hong Kong and from China and from Argentina and from Cuba and from Mozambique and Ethiopia and all over the place. And they stay here and they respond to the context. And when they have their events, it's quite, all the projects that we do are sort of socially engaged art, collaborative art. And when they have their events, they can be in any kind of places. So that could be a church, it could be a supermarket, it could be a garage, or whatever. Yeah. So that's basically Deveron Arts in a nutshell.
And exactly what's your role there? What do you do?
I'm the founding director here at Deveron Arts. So I kicked it off with a number of other people, but it started from a quite voluntary organization. Very much community art kind of organization into now it's a professional organization which has a year-round program. But yes, I oversee the program and I do curate the program as well. There's only two of us permanently working here, but there's a third one who is doing the local programming, and then we also have a number of internships running.
How is it funded? I mean, I know it's grown quite a bit, but how is this funded? Is it state or private or a combination of the two?
It started from no funding, and then we got some small funding together. But about 50% is now funded through Creative Scotland, which is basically Scottish government funding, arts funding. And the other 50% we have to seek from all kind of sources. There's a little bit of own income just through box office, and I give quite a lot of talks about this. We also get some funding from our local government here. We get free premises from the local government, and then we get a bit of EU funding, and the rest we scratch together. It tends to be British foundations and trusts. That kind of thing.
And you were saying you lecture a lot about one aspect of the funding. Is that what you were saying?
No, I don't lecture about the funding. I lecture about Deveron Arts because it's quite a unique, I think it's seen as a quite unique program because not that much, at least in Britain or in Europe, there isn't so much contemporary art development in very rural places. So I lecture about contemporary art development in the rural context.
And let's talk about one project. I'd like you to walk us through, you know, either an artist that came to you or an artist that you commissioned, and talk a little bit about how it developed and what it finally was. You know, we can talk about any project you want. Do you have one you want to start with? There's some that I would ask you about, like the walking lunches that happened a while ago. But is there a project that you want to start talking about that kind of allows people to understand the whole process from beginning to end?
Oh God, you put me on the spot. Yeah, let's say one that's quite simple to explain is Maida Lopez. She's a Spanish artist. And that was, so our projects tend to be sort of clustered around socioeconomic issues, heritage, identity building, and environment. And so that was a heritage project where we did it one per year, where we picked somebody from Huntley who came from our town, but then went out into the world in the past and made quite some impact in the world. So one of them was a missionary who went to China, and he actually went to China in the Victorian times, and he there lost interest actually in the Bible, one could say, and he gained interest in the Chinese philosophies, and so he translated the Confucius and the Tao books and the I Ching and so into English. Anyway, I'm just mentioning this because this was one of the people we got interested in. So we invited some Chinese artists who developed the project around that. But another person who came from Huntley, he was one of the very first cartographers in the 17th century, James Gordon, I'm sorry. And he was definitely the first one who ever drew Scotland. And this was quite interesting. If you imagine you live here in Huntley, but you can't even picture where Edinburgh is or something. And so we wanted to do a modern kind of response to this. And we invited Maida Lopez to this project. She's from the Basque Country in Spain. And she often does work around working with primary colors, but always with communities. So what she did, she collected stones, big sort of stones at the size of a fist, and she painted them in blue, red, green, orange, and yellow. And each of them, those colors, the blue ones that meant you like this place, and the red ones, I don't like this place, and green one meant I wanted to spend more time in this place, and so on. And one day she put all these stones in a wheelbarrow, five wheelbarrows with each of these colored stones, and people of the community would come and collect, take one stone each and walk around town and place these stones and show that way. It was a way of community mapping. How do you live a place? And so later on, people could really see what people liked and what they didn't like and where they wanted to spend more time and what they wanted to improve. So when they came back to the town square, they got a sticker, and we prepared a massive map, a really big wallpaper-sized map, where they could, and the sticker was in the same colors that they placed. So they put the sticker onto this map, and then, you know, at the end of the day, you had literally hundreds of stickers of all these colors, and you could really see the good, the bad, and the ugly of that town. And so this map is still, we have something what we call a town collection. And so if you go around town, there's about 60 or 70 artworks now, which are in all kind of shops and churches and so on. And you can walk yourself around the artworks in town. So you might have to go to a carpet shop to see a Hamish Fulton artwork, for example. Anyway, this map made part of this town collection, which is now in the Huntley Development Trust's office. So that's one project.
That's fantastic. So as well as it being an interesting project, it seems like most of the projects have a strong element of them being interactive, of literally engaging the audience somehow.
Yes, that's totally vital. So we have this 50-50 approach. And so it's always 50 artists, 50 community, 50 locality, 50 sort of universality, so local, global, and 50 criticality, 50 hospitality. So that's the kind of conundrum that makes Devran Art tick. It's really this balance rather than a compromise. So if a project, for example, might be really interesting for the art world, but it doesn't touch the community in any way, for us, that's really not a successful project. But vice versa, there could be a project that the community loves, but in a way it doesn't push on the art in any way, then it's really not that interesting for us from a professional point of view. So I think community is very important. So we don't actually at all work with studio artists who sit in the studio and after 3 months come out with some works. We're not that kind of place for them. We don't provide actually a good environment for them. So it's really much about curating in a community context where the community becomes as important as the artist.
And so that's very interesting. How do you select artists? Some of them you said were commissioned. Is there also open calls? What is the process for bringing in artists, and are there any limits? Do they come from all over the world? And you know, what is the process?
Yeah, they come from all over the world, but we rarely do open calls. And we have done open calls. Last year we wanted to do something. We were at a Documenta, and we collected acorns from the Joseph Beuys 7,000 Oaks project. We collected acorns, and we managed to grow about 100 in our garden. So they became babies of Joseph Beuys's oaks. And so we wanted to do some kind of reaction to the beginning of, you know, the centenary of World War I, and which was celebrated very much in this area in Britain. You know, it's very much about heroes still, but we wanted to more look at the pacifist, pacifists before World War I. And so, yes, for that we did an open call. But most of the time we actually appoint artists, because really the important thing is that we have the topic first and we need to look around to identify the right artist for each topic. And so how do we do this? Yeah, well, within Scotland, I guess, you know, we're very, very well networked. And in Europe probably as well. And otherwise, I travel a lot. So I'm just back from Ethiopia at the moment, but I travel quite a lot and I do a lot of studio visits and purposefully then identify artists that might fit a certain topic.
I like that approach. It's fascinating what you're doing and seems to, you know, to really be something that I can see why you'd be giving lectures, because it also truly engages the community in a unique way, especially one that's not in a city, as you said. Some urban communities must be fascinated by this. I'd like to, you know, ask a little bit about one other project, which was done, I think, 4 years ago, the Walking Lunches. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, no, Walking Lunches is an ongoing thing. I don't know.
How did that begin, and could you describe it a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've done it for years. It's sort of my own project, which is within that my work. Is Walking Lunches is a take on working lunches. I guess you have them in America as well. Yeah, working lunches is for busy people who want to not waste time, so they work during lunch. So what we don't only work during lunch, but we also walk during lunch. So you hit three things. You sort of get fit, you have your meeting, and you also have your lunch. So it's always an hour, and it has to be on a one-to-one basis. So you can't have actually more than one person for the meeting. And you also, so I bring the lunchbox, and my walking partner brings the camera, and they take a picture of a landscape, still life, and a portrait. And so we set an agenda, and it's quite important that we really stick to the agenda during the walking lunch. And at the end of it, I write the minutes, and they get approved by my walking partner, walking and working partner. And they put in into the minutes the three pictures, and then it's archived. And I have several hundred of those archived in an archive. And every so often when there is an event, I print them out and make a small exhibition of them.
And this is ongoing. You've been doing this since 2011?
Yeah, at least. I thought it was even longer.
And so how many of those have you done?
At least 250 or something. I don't know. I haven't counted them lately, but I do this regularly. Whenever we get quite a lot of researchers and, of course, artists. But I do it also with every intern we have when they finish, and I have a review like that. Or it could even be my husband or a neighbor or anybody I just want to talk to for a while. It's a good way of talking while you want to have a bit of a walk or see the landscape, and also, you know, basically you save time that way. That's the other thing.
Right. So I love that. I think walking and talking, you know, is traditionally a great way to have a good conversation. It seems to lend itself to good conversation. Of course, I'm also very interested in this project because I personally relate to it, you know, as an artist who's also doing this series. It's very much about having a conversation and talking to people. So in, you know, it also speaks to, you know, your creativity and interest as founder, as curator. What's happened in the course of all this? This is quite an archive you're building, and that's quite a lot of conversations that you've had. How is that archive used, and are books coming out of it also?
No, there are no books. How is it used? It's actually just on my computer, to be honest. But as I said, I do actually a lot of projects around art and walking. And we have also founded this thing called the Walking Institute. So Walking Institute really brings the methodology of walking, you know, makes walking a communication methodology between artists, community, and sort of specialists of other topics, of other issues. And so we do quite a lot of projects around that. And for example, last year I ran a big conference called the Highland Ways Conference. So it was one day walking only, and the next day was talking about walking and art. And so in these contexts, when we do projects around walking, I often print it out. And I just hang them all on a washing line, this archive. And maybe one day I print, put them in a book. But I don't know. The problem is a little bit, I tell you, is that, of course, they are private meetings, you know? So there could be confidential things in the minutes. So the way I print them out is that there's some basic information. For example, it says where we went and how long we walked. Normally it's about an hour. But what kind of sandwich, what was in the packed lunch. And of course there's the pictures. But the kind of minutes, I make them very faded, so they're hardly legible. So, you know, you can figure out that what has happened, but you can't really read it. Because otherwise, if there is something vaguely confidential, then that wouldn't be right to publish that, would it?
Right. So then there's the, as you said, the Walking Institute, which grew out of this project. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Walking Institute didn't really grow out necessarily of the art. It's just I do a lot of projects around walking and art, and I have been a keen walker all my life, and I think walking is such an underdiscovered way of communicating with people. You know, it's easy for conflict resolution. So if I have a problem with you and we walk next to each other, you don't necessarily have to look in my face or something. But it's a good way of bringing a lot of people together in a convivial way, which is different from maybe an exhibition opening, which normally centers around drinking Prosecco or so. And, so we do that a lot. So we work with Hamish Fulton, in a project, and we found it. The Talents of Enya program really gave us 3 years ago a big award. It was called the Creative Place Award, so we were announced the most creative place in Scotland, and so they gave us a quite good lump sum. And with that, we founded the Walking Institute. And the Walking Institute basically is a peripatetic school that uses walking of bringing art, artists, and community together. So
what's another example of what the Institute does besides the walking lunches? Because I really love this idea and how it's moving. What else would be an example of something that the Institute has done?
Okay. I'll give you an example, but there is also a website which is connected to our website, which is called walking-institute.com. But let me just think of an example, a good example. There's so many. Okay, I try to find simple ones. There's, for example, there was a path along a river, but people didn't walk it anymore, so the path has disappeared. It has totally overgrown. So there was this artist, he was researching what he called the phenomenon of minor paths. So there are paths that never really make it into a map. They're just used by people walking. And so on one day, he brought together about 50 people, and for a whole afternoon, they did nothing else but walk this 1 kilometer of path up and down, up and down. And at the end of the afternoon, you had, again, a path, but as well as an artwork, because it was an artwork as well as a path. And so this path still exists, and it makes part of this town collection now. So that's what happened. And so at the end, we gather them all with a picnic, and we bring them together, people who have something to say to this topic, so people who are maybe town planners, they are involved in path making, people who have to deal with the river because this was next to a river. And specialists in certain fields that bring together community, these specialists and the artist. So that was one example. But we've just finished the project this Saturday. So this was in fact with a musician and with a collective of two visual artists. Well, they're more sort of from a craft side, but they develop cooking as their cooking is really their artwork, and they cook from foraged materials. So, and they use anything like stinging nettles or things that people normally see as weeds. And they try out how you can infuse them and make jams out of them and so on. Anyway, this project was about land use. In Scotland, we have very feudal land rights. It's very highly problematic, and Scotland is trying to identify itself as a modern new country. And you probably know that last year we had a referendum, which in the end we stayed with Britain. But the land issue is very much on the agenda, and we wanted to research this with a number of artists. So those two set of artists in this area, it's a very remote area, and you will find vast parts of land which is totally underutilized. It's only used for grouse shooting, and there's many, many empty houses, ruined houses, because people were leaving those places over the years. And so this musician was creating music for these different places, and then we took people out on a bus to this area, and then we took them for a long walk, and they could identify the music. They could find the music with their GPS through geocaching, and when they arrived, they could download this music. But in this case, on Saturday, we also took the musician himself to these places, and he gave mini concerts at each of these places. And then they had these two women artists who do the cooking with these foraged things that they found in that landscape. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's basically...
That does make sense. And just to be clear, by the geocaching, that means when you get to a certain site, with your telephone, you're downloading an audio that's kind of site specific?
Yes, that's right. But you have to go there first. And sometimes you have to walk about 5 miles to get to that.
I like that. So, you know, in closing, Claudia, there are people listening to this artist, different kinds of people from around the world, and there's going to be information in here about the organization and the things we've been talking about. Do you want to leave them with anything? Do you want to encourage people to visit, to come by? Anything you want, you can leave them with. But if you want people to visit who may be in the area, feel free to share that.
Oh, no, sure. I mean, of course, we really welcome visits. I mean, we're in quite, as you figured out, we're in a quite remote place. But it is lovely to have visitors. We have for us, that's really an important part to the hospitality site. We have a kitchen and everybody comes together to cook together. And so that part of homemaking is really an important part of our work. And so, yeah, we welcome any kind of visitors. We have, in particular, you know, of course, artists and researchers. But also, if you can't make it, we can understand. And then visit us on our website or join our Facebook.
Claudia, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been fascinating understanding about your organization and your practice.
Okay, good night then.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.